Welcome to the deep dive. Think about the last time someone asked, "How are things?" And you just automatically said, "Fine."
We all do it.
Yeah, exactly. But how often is that fine, really? Just, well, a facade.
A mask, maybe.
Right, a mask for feeling stuck, knowing you want something more, but just completely unable to get things moving.
That feeling of inertia.
That's it. So today, we're going to try and cut through that psychological inertia. We're doing a deep dive into Mel Robbins' blueprint for breaking stagnation, drawing heavily from her book, Stop Saying You're Fine.
A very direct title.
It is. And our mission here is simple. Understand why our brains seem to actively fight against change. Why they prefer, you know, comfortable boredom over uncertain progress.
And for you listening, if you need knowledge fast, something actionable, this deep dive is structured for that.
Yeah.
Robbins doesn't just point out the problem. She gives you a framework, a system.
Okay.
So we're distilling those strategies right away. You'll understand the impulses keeping you stuck and, importantly, how to counteract them.
So practical diagnosis and the solution, not just theory.
Exactly. Straight to the point.
Okay, let's unpack this core conflict then. Why do we, even smart, ambitious people, tend to stick with routines that honestly make us kind of unhappy?
Well, Robbins argues it's deep-seated. Evolutionary, even.
Evolutionary, how so?
Our minds inherently prefer consistency, security. Think about it from a survival perspective.
Okay.
Historically, recognizing patterns, sticking to the known path, that kept you safe. The familiar route didn't have a surprise predator.
Right, that makes sense. Avoid the unknown danger.
Precisely. That tendency was crucial then. But now, in our modern world, that same mechanism shows up as, well, stagnation. Discontent.
So our wiring is kind of outdated for the current environment.
In a way, yes. The brain's habit-forming part, it's sort of autopilot, prioritizes comfort. It steers clear of anything that smells like risk.
Even if the risk is just trying something new.
Especially then. It wants the easy path, the familiar comfort.
So the brain acts like an office manager who just keeps hitting copy-paste on everything.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It defaults to that unless we consciously make it do something different.
An override.
Exactly. It wants instant gratification, avoids the mental effort of solving new problems.
Yeah.
And faced with tons of choices today, we just fall back on routine.
Because it's easy, requires no energy.
Right. And that ease, that's the silent killer. It breeds that background hum of dissatisfaction.
But if the routine itself starts feeling bad, like genuine tedium, why don't we just stop? What keeps us hooked?
Ah, the hidden payoff. It's temporary comfort.
Okay.
And the brain loves comfort, even fleeting comfort. Robbins points out that these routine behaviors, they can act like tiny addictions.
Addictions? Like
triggered by cues in our environment. Waking up, sitting at your desk, reaching for your phone.
Okay. The usual triggers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And following that chain of actions gives a little hit of familiarity, temporary emotional relief.
But,
and this is key, those same comfort-seeking behaviors gobble up your time and energy. They basically extinguish the chances for real self-improvement.
And that leads to what she calls anti-actions, right? I found that concept really powerful.
Oh, absolutely. Anti-actions. They're the things you do instead of the one important thing you know you actually need to tackle.
So looking busy but achieving nothing meaningful.
Exactly that. It's a form of highly active procrastination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of starting that big, scary project.
You organize your inbox for the fifth time.
Or you dive deep into researching competitors, telling yourself it's preparation.
Guilty.
We all do it. And we do it because we overvalue the familiar, the job, the relationship, the routine, even if they're not great. Why?
Security.
Guaranteed security. And the thought of trading that known, even if mediocre security for uncertain progress, that feels terrifying.
Yeah, the uncomfortable cage feels safer than the unknown wilderness outside. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Let's shift to the cognitive traps then, because this is where that clash between what feels good now and what we want long term really plays out.
Right. The biggest trap, the main immobilizer, it's fear.
Okay. Fear of.
Well, specifically how our brain processes risk. It's wired, really wired, to prioritize potential threats.
Worries.
Over excitement or possibility.
Way over. So a new idea pops up, start a business. Move somewhere new.
Yeah.
The brain immediately floods you with what ifs. What if I fail? What if I get rejected? What if I lose money?
It jumps straight to the worst case scenario.
Dramatically so. We massively overemphasize the potential downsides linked to making a change.
And that ties into focalism, doesn't it? Where we just fixate on that one potential disaster.
Absolutely nails it. Focalism. It's confusing the severity of a potential bad outcome with the actual probability of it happening.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Thinking of quitting your job to, say, start that bakery you dream about.
Okay.
Your brain doesn't just say it might be tough. It screams, you'll lose everything. Bankruptcy. Homelessness.
Which is severe, yeah.
Extremely severe. But what's the real likelihood? Robbins argues focalism makes us ignore positive outcomes. And crucially,
we totally underestimate our own resilience, our ability to adapt and figure things out if, you know, things don't go perfectly smoothly.
So we get paralyzed just by thinking about the worst possible thing.
Immobilized, yeah.
Okay, so fear paralyzes us. But there's another big piece keeping us stuck. Denial.
Ah, denial. We are masters of self-deception, aren't we?
Seems like it. Why is it so effective?
Because it's comfortable, plain and simple. It feels better in the moment to persuade ourselves things are acceptable.
Even when we feel that deep discontent.
Especially then. We minimize the problems, or we just bury ourselves in those anti-actions we talked about. Anything to avoid really looking at the situation.
So what's the antidote to denial?
Robbins is really clear on this. The first critical step is what she implies is a candor audit.
A candor audit? Sounds intense.
It means acknowledging the true state of things, your current reality, with absolute unwavering honesty. No excuses, no minimizing.
Just the brutal truth.
Brutal might be the word. Setting aside all those stories you tell yourself about why things have to be this way.
How specific does this candor need to be? Is it just, yeah, I'm unhappy, or does it need to go deeper?
What has to be specific? Not just, I wish things were better.
More like,
I hate my job because it's boring, I feel unchallenged, and I haven't applied for anything else in 3 years because I'm terrified of interviews.
Ooh, okay. That specific.
That specific. Because until you face that truth, the emotional cost of staying fine will always seem less scary than the perceived risk of changing.
Right. Shatter the denial first. But then, okay, we face another modern problem. Too much choice. Choice overload.
The paradox of having options. It's real.
How does that trap us?
Well, having too many choices often leads to massive regret or just complete paralysis.
Because you worry you'll pick the wrong one.
Exactly. Think about anything choosing a career path out of dozens, even, as she mentioned, something like a hobby like scrapbooking with thousands of potential supplies.
Oh, okay.
The sheer number of options means you can spend more time worrying about all the paths you didn't take than actually moving forward on the one you chose.
That fear of missing out, or FOMO, applied to life decisions.
Pretty much. The fear of making a less than perfect choice. It often stops us from making any choice at all. Halts action completely.
Okay, so we've built the wall. Inertia, fear, denial, this overload of choice. It feels pretty high.
It can seem insurmountable.
But the only way through, as Robbins emphasizes, is to force change. To take action. So we need something to break that inertia.
And that something has a name. Momentum.
Momentum.
She puts it perfectly. Something like every positive action creates momentum for the next action.
Okay.
When you start building momentum, you're basically creating a perpetual motion machine.
A perpetual motion machine. I like that. It gives you the energy for the next step.
Exactly. It means that first push, that initial action, is the absolute hardest part, but it gets easier.
So the book lays out a process for this, a systematic way to build that momentum and empower yourself.
Yes, while she doesn't use rigid chapter titles like Step 1, Step 2, the blueprint clearly flows through about 5 core phases to make change happen.
Operationalizing change. Okay.
The whole point, the mandate really, is to honor your own creativity, your desire for more, by actually delivering change through action.
Breaking those habits the brain loves so much.
You got it. Let's walk through that progression, how you actually do it. First up, as we discussed, is that candor audit.
Facing the specific reality, no more excuses.
Right. You simply cannot solve a problem you refuse to clearly define. That's job one.
Okay, truth faced, what's next? You have to actually do something, right? Activate the system.
Exactly. Phase two is what we can think of as the action trigger.
Triggering the action. What does that mean practically?
It's initiating one specific, often tiny, micro action.
Micro action, like
opening the document for the report, like putting on your running shoes. It's translating that honest thought into a physical movement, no matter how small.
Why is that tiny step so vital?
Because it overrides the brain's immediate scream for comfort and its resistance to starting. It breaks the freeze.
Okay, trigger pulled, action initiated. But one small step isn't enough. You need to keep going.
Precisely. Which brings us to phase three. The consistency commitment.
Committing to consistency. Makes sense.
This is where you harness that little bit of initial momentum. You create new, deliberate habits.
Yeah.
By setting really predictable short-term goals and sticking to them rigidly.
Mm.
Like, if the big goal is writing a book,
yeah,
the consistency commitment might be write for 15 minutes every single day. Doesn't matter if you feel inspired or not. Just do the 15 minutes.
Okay, build the habit. But resistance doesn't just vanish, right? It comes back.
Oh, it absolutely comes back, which leads logically to phase four through resistance reflection.
Reflecting on the resistance, so analyzing the setback.
Exactly. It's about documenting and figuring out why you stalled, where did it happen, what was the trigger this time.
So it's not about failure. It's about data collection.
Perfect way to put it. It's a feedback loop. You identify what tripped you up, maybe a specific time of day, a certain thought pattern, and you plan how to navigate it better next time.
Okay. Analyze and adapt. And the final phase must be about checking if it's actually working, if it feels right.
Yes. The fifth phase is the fulfillment calibration.
Calibrating fulfillment.
It's the assessment stage.
Mm-hmm.
Moving beyond just checking boxes. Did you do the task? Great. But the real question is, did this action, this new behavior, actually enhance your sense of growth? Does it feel more aligned with who you want to be?
So connecting the action back to the deeper why.
Precisely. And that assessment feeds right back into the next cycle of the candor audit, maybe refining a goal or the action. It's a continuous loop.
Wow. Okay. That structure from brutal honesty to action, consistency, reflection, and checking for fulfillment, that makes it feel much more manageable.
It takes it out of the realm of vague wishes and into a concrete process.
Definitely. So let's get super practical now. For someone listening who wants to start rewiring their brain today, what are some concrete tips Robbins offers? Let's say four key ones.
Okay, yeah, she offers several very tangible things. These are designed to subtly train your brain to handle novelty better. Little changes to prep for bigger ones. First one, change your environment.
How? Like move house.
No, simpler. Just rearrange your living space or your workspace a bit every month or so.
Why would shuffling furniture help?
Because your brain gets used to the visual consistency. That reinforces mental consistency, aka ruts. Regularly changing, say, your desk layout or where the sofa is, it gently forces your brain to adapt.
It breaks the visual monotony.
Exactly. It's low stakes training for adapting to newness.
Okay, that seems doable. Surprisingly simple. What's the next strategy?
The second one is all about gratification delay.
Delaying gratification. Okay, how?
Implement a simple reward system. Set a specific goal, finish a chapter, complete that workout, and choose a non-monetary reward you only get after completion.
Like watching your favorite show.
Perfect example. Only watch that next episode after you've done the thing you committed to. It trains your brain.
Trains it how?
To link satisfaction with completing something challenging, not just with immediate comfort. It builds your muscle for anticipating and working towards longer-term rewards.
Right, fighting that instant gratification urge. Okay, strategy three. If choice overload is an issue,
then you need to simplify the daily decision battle. That's where the routine theme comes in.
Theme your routines. What does that look like?
You use routines strategically. Assign a specific theme or focus to each day of the week.
For example?
Like Mondays are for deep focused work. Tuesdays are for meetings and networking. Fridays are maybe for learning or admin catch-up.
Ah, so it reduces the constant, what should I work on now, decision fatigue.
Exactly. It creates a predictable container which paradoxically frees up mental energy to tackle the actual growth goals within that structure.
Using structure to enable flexibility. Clever. Okay, and the last one, you mentioned reflection earlier.
Yes, the fourth strategy is more reflective, the change journal.
Journaling about change.
Specifically, documenting your feelings and experiences when you encounter change or resistance.
So if I resist doing something new.
Write it down. Not just what happened, but try to explore why you felt that resistance.
Yeah.
Was it fear? Annoyance? Overwhelm?
And how does that help long term?
Over time, it creates a map of your personal resistance patterns. You start to see themes.
You can anticipate them.
And address them more consciously. Instead
yeah.
of just reacting with fear, you can recognize, okay, this is that focalism thing kicking in again, or this is my fear of judgment. It gives you power over the reaction.
This has been incredibly insightful, really digging into Mel Robbins' blueprint. The core message feels very clear. It's a fight against our brain's preference for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And that fight is one with honesty, that the candor audit plus specific strategic actions and building momentum, one small step building on the last.
Absolutely. And if you zoom out a bit, you see how neatly this fits with broader ideas in personal development.
Mm.
Concepts like self-control, willpower.
Right. People like Tony Robbins talk about massive action, peak states.
Exactly. His work, like in Unlimited Power, often focuses on that macro level, big goals, big energy shifts.
Okay.
Mel Robbins, with this material, provides the essential micro guide. She's showing you how to defeat the day-to-day psychological friction, those small, subtle forces that stop the massive action from even getting started.
So it's like the foundational work you need to do first.
You could absolutely see it that way. It's the psychological groundwork needed before you can really start shifting your destiny in a big way.
That really brings it together. Okay, one final provocative thought for you, the listener, to chew on based on all this.
Mm-hmm.
Robbins highlights how we fixate on the potential downsides of changing things. It makes staying put, staying safe, feel like the only logical choice.
Right. The fear of the unknown.
But here's the twist the source material suggests. There are also specific certain dangers in not changing. Dangers inherent in staying exactly where you are, even if it feels safe now.
The danger of the status quo.
Exactly. So the question to reflect on is, what certain danger, maybe the danger of regret, of untapped potential, of simply losing time, what certain danger are you choosing to ignore right now by staying fine?